Now, this is not what I think, but I believe you think.
No, do what you think. Don't preempt my preemption. Just say what you want to say, you turkey. It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 222. I'm your host, Adam Magnum. First up, Spencer Linton of BYU TV comes on the show to discuss his call of Lexi Eaton-Rydolch's game winner, who made Sports Center, by the way, Nick Emery's big weekend, and also about Taysom's return to BYU football. Matt and I then chat about Emery, Taysom, Tanner, and what we'd do if we won the lottery. This is the Rise and Shout Podcast. Get all your Cougar news at CougarFan.com and listen to us talk about it right now. Welcoming back to the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, BYU TV's Spencer Linton, a man who I hear you can hit a half-court shot, not just make good calls on them.
You know, once upon a time, I'd like to say that I could put them in from half court with the best of them, but it's probably been about 15 years.
Hey, still pretty cool. So walk us through that game. Obviously, the last few minutes, Lexi's last few seconds, I should say, Lexi's got a shot. When I watched the replay, if I had been watching it live, I would have been screaming at her to take one more step or two and shoot it. But walk us through that call and walk us through kind of the aftermath.
Okay, so first of all, the shot, and you're right. Like, and you could hear it when I was calling the shot on the air. I said, she has time.
Right.
Because I knew she was going up to shoot the ball with 2.5 seconds left, and so I was thinking the same thing you were and a lot of people were, and that is, take another dribble or two, pull up for three. And so I think that when she hit the shot, because we were all like, oh, it's too early, that's what pushed the emotion like over the top, was like, oh my gosh, she made it anyway.
Right.
And
right.
Yes, I mean, it's just one of those things that you can't script, and it proves once again why live sports are like the ultimate reality television. Like, you cannot plan for something like that. And, you know, the more I go back and listen to the call, I'm just like, man, did I do it right? I sound like an idiot. I don't know. But, yeah, it was a fun to be a part of that. And, I mean, all the credit obviously goes to Lexi because, you know, she gets herself on SportsCenter, top 10, number 2, and she's the all-time leading scorer in the West Coast Conference and one of the top scorers in the country. So, obviously, you know, she's the real deal. I was just happy to be a part of it. And I think that the thing that we will forget about and we shouldn't forget about is the BYU erased a 14-point deficit in under 7 minutes.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And found a way to come back and keep that win streak alive. It was just, the comeback was incredible, as was the meltdown by San Francisco continuing to turn the ball over. It was a perfect storm, and somehow BYU found a way, and Lexi Eaton hit that shot that I'm sure she'll never forget.
Yeah, unfortunately, if you're a San Diego fan, that's one of those gut punch games. You had a borderline top 25, top 30 team on the ropes, and you let them get up, and you can't you give a player like Lexi a chance to win the game. She has done it before, hitting game winning shots. So that's
absolutely
something she's going to
do.
There
are always two sides, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, but this is not a San Diego sports podcast, so we don't care that much. Moving on to another person who can score the basketball, Nick Emery. I was actually in San Francisco, got to see that game in person due to a business trip that just happened to be planned well by myself. Let's talk about where Nick Emery is at. I mean, I know the competition was not great. Those are not great teams in San Francisco and Santa Clara, but it's still 60-some-odd points and 65% shooting from a guard. So let's walk through this. Where is Nick Emery? Do you think this is signs that he's kind of elevated his game, or is this just a matter of, well, it's just right place, right time?
I think he's finally starting to get into a comfortable rhythm. When you talk to Nick, and I've asked him a couple of times, what's the hardest part about coming off of a 2-year LDS mission? And then given his condition with the thoracic outlet syndrome, where his blood flow needed some help and he had to have some ribs removed to help that. And he said, just getting my shot back, just feeling like my shot is all the way back. He said, that's been the slowest thing in terms of getting back to full game speed. And now more than ever, he kind of is starting to feel like that. And I think, man, how many freshmen, and I know he's a return missionary freshman, so it's qualified, but how many guys in their first year of major Division I college basketball can go on a 4-for-25 shooting slump from three and then come back and do that in back-to-back games on the road? I was blown away, one, by his confidence and his moxie to just go out and work his way out of that slump and do so in such record-breaking fashion.
Yeah, yeah, it was impressive. I think a lot of us were wondering if he'd, you know, just naturally you think maybe he's just run out of gas, right? I mean, he's a freshman.
Yeah.
He's right off a mission, and you think, well, maybe he just hit the wall, and unfortunately at a bad time. So today on your show on BYU Sports Nation, you and Jerem got in a fun little argument about who the best team is in the West Coast Conference. Tell me, who is the best men's team on the women's side? Let's say it's BYU. Pretty good lead there. They just need to win one more to win the league outright. But on the men's side, who's the best team right now in the WCC?
No, I'm glad we're going here again. Now, to Jerem's point, Gonzaga has the best record, and they are the top team in the league right now.
Right.
But I think because they haven't played St. Mary's and BYU both times, and they have had the benefit of what I think is one of the easiest laid out schedules of any team in the conference. They have a desirable layout.
Yes.
They didn't have to go do what BYU did and play 6 of 8 on the road, you know, open the season at St. Mary's on New Year's Eve, for crying out loud. It was brutal for BYU and for St. Mary's to have to play BYU New Year's Eve too. That's crazy. But Gonzaga has a nice little setup. They don't lose games to RPI 200 plus teams, but they don't offset it, or they haven't offset it thus far this year with really any quality wins outside of beating Connecticut. They lost to St. Mary's. They lost to BYU at home. They need to beat St. Mary's for me to say right now, like, that is the best team in the conference. If Gonzaga beats St. Mary's on Saturday, I will say, okay, right now, Gonzaga is the number one team. But because they've lost head-to-head with the other top two teams, it's hard for me to say that. And
yeah,
the way that BYU has played, even though they lost to Pacific and Portland and had some just serious head-scratchers, the fact that they have a winning record against the top half of the conference and Pepperdine, St. Mary's, and Gonzaga do not, just that blew me away when I did the research there. And I think that BYU absolutely, especially with the weekend they just came off of, right now, right this minute, they're playing super confident, and I think that they should feel like the best team in the conference.
Yeah. I'm sure they, at this point, feel super confident for sure. So let's talk a little bit about going forward. Obviously, got the San Diego, the Strange at San Diego, and then at home against San Diego this week in Gonzaga. Looking out at a lot of the projection systems at this point are saying, depending on which one you look at, that WCC is either a 1 or a 2-bid league. Is BYU at the point at this point with some of those bad losses where, you know, the game against Gonzaga will be nice to win, of course, here down the stretch, but in the end, they got to win 3 in Vegas regardless of what happens against Gonzaga next week?
You know, a lot of people think that it's win the Vegas tournament or bust for BYU, but there are metrics in place. That there's just so many moving parts in college basketball, and RPI is so dependent on what other teams do. And right now, BYU has a couple of wins that are not RPI top 100 wins. One is against Northern Iowa, who is RPI 101, and the other is
right,
102, and that's Pepperdine. So if those numbers jump up, that helps BYU's RPI and boosts their NCAA tournament resume. And if they win out, they win the rest of their regular season games and can get to the championship game on Tuesday night in Las Vegas, that would mean 8 straight wins and 25 wins overall. And certainly at that point, BYU would be a top 50 RPI team. If that is the case, I just don't see how you leave out a 25-win Dave Rose team that swept Gonzaga in the regular season and had a winning record against the other best teams in the West. I don't think the committee, in their right minds, could leave out a 25-win BYU team that got hot at the end of the year and beat Gonzaga twice. I think there's enough in the resume there, but that's still asking a lot, you know?
Yeah.
Win 8 games in a row, okay? It's super easy. BYU's longest win streak this year is 4 games. And so you got to be realistic. More than likely, BYU will be in a situation where they have to win 3 in Vegas to get in, but the opportunity for at-large is still there if they can win all the way until at least Tuesday night in Vegas.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. I think there is that opportunity, and crazy things happen, and certainly the Dave Rose factor and how well his teams have played down the stretch in the past that I think will affect a little bit. It's not completely a subjective process. So let's switch to the other big, huge news today that happened, I think, after you guys were done with your show. So
yeah.
We're going to get the hot take from you, Spencer, before you get a chance to say it on the show. But Taysom Hill announced today that he will be returning to BYU. Of course, there had been rumors about him transferring to other schools. There was last week the, oh my gosh, Virginia's got this big announcement. It's going to be Taysom. It turns out it was Old Dominion scheduling, which is not as exciting as Taysom Hill. How do we have any idea how close Taysom was to leaving BYU? Do we know if there actually was an opportunity for him to go play quarterback elsewhere? Are we just all assuming that? And if so, why do you think he stayed?
Well, I can share this much with you. There were opportunities for Taysom to go somewhere else, certainly. And so what he was doing, and right, he did the right thing, and that is to just weigh the options. Look at what options are even out there. Talk through things with his wife, Emily, and figure out what's going to be the best for him for his potential football career if he decides to pursue that and stays healthy for a year, or if he just wants to play a year at BYU and go bed into the professional world and be successful that way and work in finance and investment banking. So I think the reason it took him a while is he just had to weigh out all the options and see what was even available. And so there were opportunities for him. It just turns out that BYU was the best one for him to come in and settle back down and try and get healthy and come back and play one more year. And I think that, well, in fact, I know that Ty Detmer and Kalani Sitake and the new staff did a great job recruiting him and were a big part of why Taysom decided to come back. And if you think about it, that's, you know, Kalani's highest rated recruit of this class in a weird way. Because yeah. Taysom decided to come back, and now he's going to be with Jamal Williams. And I do want to say this. I think people take the excitement for Taysom Hill deciding to stay at BYU as kind of like this shot at Tanner Mangum. And in no way does it do that. Tanner Mangum might be the starting quarterback against Arizona 200 days from now. We don't know. It's all dependent on if Taysom can get healthy and who adapts to the offense quickly. In my personal opinion, I think they will find ways and plays and situations for both quarterbacks to play this year and be effective. And it's not going to be a switch every series. I think it will just be situationally who's going to do what in here and how can we confuse the defense. And that's a great problem for Ty Detmer to have to figure out.
Yeah, so let's dig into that a little more, Spencer. I mean, I think the fear from some fans, and I'm not necessarily in that group, but it's a fear that you have these two QBs, both of whom are very talented, both of whom, at least at some point, maybe Taysom still does despite the injuries, have sights on the next level, both of whom were highly recruited. Now, other programs deal with this all the time. Some of the P5 programs may have two quarterbacks with this kind of pedigree at the same time. BYU historically does not have this situation very often. Usually when there's quarterback controversies, it's typically because maybe they don't have a guy like a Tanner or a Taysom. Now you've got both. The first time somebody struggles, of course, fans are fickle. They'll be asking for the other guy to come in and do the job. I mean, is there that potential for a rift in the team, or are Taysom and Tanner personality-wise such that you don't think that's as much of an issue if, say, you know, one of them, you swap their personality out for somebody else who might be get mopey on the sideline if they get yanked for the other guy?
I can't think of two more suited personalities because of the maturity, because of the fact that they're both return missionaries, and it is BYU, and they understand that they have different skill sets, and they are going to present opposing defenses with different things to game plan for. I think that they are mature enough to know that this is an absolute advantage for BYU to have when they take the field. For a defense not to know us, am I going to have to deal with a dual threat Taysom Hill, who's a better passer now, or am I going to have to worry about Tanner Mangum, who has a rocket arm and is a prototypical pro-style drop-back quarterback in tight end's offense? I think that the dynamic of having a game plan for the two is such a tool that BYU could use, and I'm sure that the two people that are driving that home into the minds of Taysom and Tanner right now are Kalani Sitake and Ty Detmer, saying, look, we're going to utilize you the best that we can, and it's going to work, and it's going to be great. In terms of, like, competitive spirit, man, I don't know two more competitive guys than Taysom and Tanner. They both want to win. They both want to compete, and they will both prepare like they are going to be the starter. It's going to be an epic fall camp to watch these two go out and compete and play with the teammates and against each other in, you know, indirect ways. But it's just, I cannot wait. I can't think of a more compelling situation. But again, to their credit, they're so mature. They're so well thought out about these types of things that I think that they can handle it. And if they couldn't handle it, I don't think Ty Detmer and Kalani Sitake would have pushed for Taysom to come back as hard as they did. I think they have a plan, and I think they are excited to implement it.
Yeah, yeah. This is a good problem to have. It's much better than having zero QBs. So,
absolutely. Well, and there's no guarantee. That's the thing. There's no guarantee that Taysom Hill, you know, he can go the whole season. Maybe his foot gets sore or something happens and he has to sit out a game. Like, how nice is it to have Tanner Mangum, or if Tanner gets hurt, to be like, hey, Taysom, we're going to need you to go. Like, having two elite quarterbacks is a wonderful problem to have, just like you said.
Yep, absolutely. Well, Spencer, thanks for coming on the show. We'll, of course, encourage everybody to go out and listen to your show every day. That's BYU Sports Nation, available on BYU TV, BYU Radio, and on demand, of course, after they listen to the Rise and Shout podcast. But we're only once a week, so they got to get you guys, for their daily dose.
They have no excuse not to listen to you guys once a week.
That's
man.
Right. That's once a week. Put it on 2X. We sound like gerbils, and it's great. But you can do it with you guys too. though Jerem gets going, I can do 1.5X with you guys. But if you go to 2X, Jerem is completely unintelligible. So, but anyway, thanks for coming on, Spencer, and we'll have you on again sometime soon.
Hey, you got it. Always a pleasure.
CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 222.
That's lucky. We should be buying lottery tickets or something, right?
Yeah, is it still like $1 billion if you win the Powerball? I think it's down.
No, yeah, it's come down. I think it's 100, because there's a huge billboard I passed on my way to work. I think it's 180 million or something right now.
So how many times when it got up that big did you think about how your life would be after you won the lottery?
I don't think I could count that in times. I'd probably have to measure it in hours. Hours spent thinking about it.
I've twice had a dream where I won the lottery.
That's almost like actually winning the lottery.
Hey, if we both won the lottery, would we do this podcast every day? Would we do a daily podcast?
So, actually, funny you should ask. Huh. That's one of the things I've thought about I thought about what I would do if I won the lottery.
There you go.
And the answer is yes.
Yes. Yes, that is the answer.
We would have 7 podcasts.
Well, we've dreamed about doing a baseball podcast, so we'd definitely do that.
The baseball podcast would be on.
This could move to daily during football season, maybe just a couple times a week otherwise, because we have to have time to golf. Because if I won the lottery, I'd become a golfer.
That would be fun. We'd have to live near each other, because then we could golf together.
No, we don't. We just fly and go golfing somewhere on my jet.
I love it. I love how irresponsible you're being with your money that you haven't even won yet.
Yes. I mean, if you're going to win $1 billion, buy a jet. I'm just saying.
You buy the jets.
No, I wouldn't. Actually, I might buy the Jets, and then
I'd move them. I'd move them out of New York.
Just like terrible drafts.
Well, you don't need to buy them to get that.
Well played, sir. Well played, sir. Well, Matt, we got a lot to cover, so I didn't really have an opening. Apparently, our opening was the lottery. The two Mormon guys thinking about winning the lottery. And to remind people, go out to facebook.com/riseandshout, like our page. It's getting popular. I think we're up to like 50 likes.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's a big group out there. It's quite a community.
Quite
the community. Matt, men's volleyball rolled this weekend on in a East Coast trip that doesn't quite happen. That's Princeton and New Jersey Institute of Technology. They're now ranked number 2. Women's basketball, 14 straight wins, one win away from the league crown. Of course, Lexi Eaton-Rydalch, she hit a game-winning shot against San Diego.
Pretty sweet shot.
Pretty sweet shot. We just talked with Spencer Linton, who got the call, and his call was on SportsCenter.
That's what I was going to say. That made SportsCenter, that shot.
That made SportsCenter. Will this podcast ever make SportsCenter?
Maybe.
We need to do something, like, outrageous.
I don't know how you do something outrageous on a podcast.
How about this? You tell the starting quarterback he needs to take his jersey off, put it in the locker room, and walk away from the team.
That's not exactly what I said. I said he needed to take his jersey off and hide it and himself in the locker room.
Okay, well, fair enough. I got some of the particulars wrong, but I think I got the spirit of your thought.
Do you disagree with the spirit of my thought?
I did at the time on the podcast. I thought you were being a lunatic.
And I was being a little bit of a lunatic.
Yeah, it's all right. It's all right.
If I was Riley Nelson, I would probably punch me in the face.
Yeah. And the other part that was great about that is you would have never done that.
No, I would have done exactly what he did.
Yeah, yeah.
From a football player standpoint, you want him to do exactly what he did.
Yes, try as hard as you can.
And I can't believe we're really getting into this.
Why not?
He should be going out onto the field unless he's dead. Like right, he should be going out there. If he has got anything left in the tank, it's the coach's responsibility to make that decision.
Yes, it is. Yeah, look at that. Well, we'll get to quarterbacks here in a bit, Matt. Cougars in the pros with the next pick in the NBA draft.
Sit down, Goodell.
That'd be great in the NBA draft. Actually, I bet you during the NBA draft somebody shouts that while the draft is going on.
Yeah. You might not be able to hear it because there's so many boos.
So Matt Jimmer was the all-star MVP of the D-League and then was on the Dan Patrick Show. Jimmer is he is Tebow, isn't he?
He's like an enigma. Yeah, I don't understand it.
Like, has the D-League MVP, all-star game MVP ever been on a major radio program right afterwards?
I highly doubt it.
So, good for Jimmer, though.
Actually, let me throw this one out there.
Sure.
Now, the fact that Jimmer was the D-League All-Star Game MVP, that was reported, as you said, on various media outlets. Have you ever seen that reported before?
I didn't even know they had an All-Star Game.
Right, that also came as a shock to me. And wasn't it played in Toronto, like, the day before?
I don't know. You made that up. I think it's in New York.
Des Moines or something.
No, I don't think it's Des Moines. I don't know anything about the D-League, quite frankly, outside of the Jimmer place in it. You know, it is not like minor league baseball where you need to follow, if you're really a big baseball fan, you follow the farm system of your team because that's where your future good players are going to come from, you know. The D-League is kind of, I don't want to say wasteland because some guys do come from there and come back onto teams and make impacts. It's just not very often, you know. So I don't know. Good for Jimmer. I mean, he's still in the news. He's doing Jimmer-like things.
Ridiculous shots.
Hitting ridiculous shots. You know, he said on the Dan Patrick Show he'd love to play for Golden State. That is a team that I think could have figured out how to use him.
Yeah, you just take ridiculous shots.
Yes. Now, that being said, I don't think he cracks the lineup. Yeah, I mean, you put him on Golden State now. I watch a lot of their games. He doesn't play on that team.
Now, they're exceptionally good. Historically good.
Yes, historically good. Speaking of that, did you watch any of the NBA All-Star Game?
I did.
Yeah, I rarely do, but I actually watched some of it. This it was a ridiculous offensive slugfest. I love Russell Westbrook getting ticked because somebody tried to block his shot.
I think that's pretty funny.
That was pretty funny. He's entertaining. He's entertaining. But actually,
well, let me ask you this: all the Kobe love overdone or just right?
Wait, okay. I can't speak to this rationally. I'm a Celtics fan. Okay,
that's why I brought it up.
I think it's overdone. That being said, I'm of two minds of this. Kobe Bryant, clearly at his peak, was an all-time great. I just think his peak was a lot shorter than a lot of other NBA fans do. If you look at the advanced statistics, it's not as many years as you think it is. He's played for the last almost decade as either a all-star caliber to mediocre to downright not very good player, as opposed to, say, like a Tim Duncan, who maybe his peak wasn't as high, though it was pretty close, and has been good every season he's ever played, right? So is Tim Duncan going to get this? No.
Probably not.
Because Tim Duncan wouldn't allow it. You know what I mean? Like, this is pure Kobe. Like, it's still about Kobe, and he's not any good anymore. I can't stand Kobe.
Awesome. I got just what I wanted.
Yeah, you did. You stoked the fire, and I can't resist.
I didn't even have to try.
I was in an airport and sat next to the Stanford men's gymnastics team, Matt.
Oh, wow. I could see this going very poorly, but I didn't get a phone call telling me to get you a lawyer, so it didn't go as bad as I would have expected.
I just didn't say anything.
Probably smart. Gymnasts are very strong.
I was just waiting for one of them to ask me, because I work in agriculture, what my shirt said. So I could say, oh, the industry that your band made fun of at the Rose Bowl. But I decided just to leave it alone. Plus, if it had been the band, I would have been calling you. Asking for some legal help to get me out of
jail. This great attorney. Call Saul.
Call Saul. Better call him. So Matt, let's talk about my trip to California. Not totally, but I spent my last night there Thursday night last week in San Francisco, decided to go up to the game. I have some observations before we get to Emory, okay? Tell me what you think.
Okay, what do you got?
First of all, do you remember playing, or I guess you didn't play high school basketball, but you remember going to games in Hull?
Yes.
That's what this was like, Hull, Massachusetts, the San Francisco gym.
That's like, it's for those of you who have not been to
Hull, Massachusetts, which is all of you.
This is small.
The gym is tiny. Now, I'm being a little facetious.
Did they have bleachers, though?
They had bleachers. They did have some seats with backs on them.
That sounds classy.
I mean, it is classier than Hull, Massachusetts, but it's probably Cohasset, you know, like a nice gym, high school gym. But it's still, like, when people say that, and they say it derogatorily a lot, in reality, that's what it is, right? These gyms are like high school gyms. It felt like a high school gym. It didn't feel anything like the Marriott Center or other big college basketball venues I've been to. Not a lot of fans. I took a picture of the band. There was like 8 kids in it. You know, this is... someday we got to get out of the West Coast Conference. I know this is not the year to make fun of the conference, seeing that we've lost to some of the more mediocre teams, but...
Yeah, depending on the way the system was set up, the way you'd get out of it this year might be relegation. Okay?
I think
you got to be careful what you ask for there.
Look at you breaking out the soccer reference and everything. That being said, the other part, Matt, was there is a massive talent difference, which luckily played out in the score between those two teams. Sometimes when you're there in person, you can see some of those things, the speed players are moving at, some of that stuff that gets a little bit lost on television. But there isn't a guy on San Francisco that cracks BYU starting five. And I believe that's true for Santa Clara.
That's got to be disheartening, though, right? If you're that team.
Yeah, and you can out-effort and potentially out-coach. Rex Chapman is not going to out-coach Dave Rose, by the way. Rex Chapman's offense and defense lacks absolute and total imagination. And they kept doing the same stuff on defense, even though it clearly wasn't working. You know, they didn't really adjust. Like, if Emery gets that hot, you double him off of somebody not named Chase Fisher, right?
Seems like a reasonable approach.
Kyle Collinsworth isn't a great outside shooter. You can leave him open at the three-point line. You don't let Emery do what Emery did. And at the beginning of the game, Matt, some of the San Francisco guys, and you can hear it because there's nobody there, were giving Emery crap. And his last three-pointer, one of the guys said something right before he got the ball. Said, I couldn't quite make it out, but something along the lines of, you know, you're not that great or something. It's like the guys just dropped 30-something points on you guys. And then Emery drains it in his face and just held eye contact with him. And I'm just like, wee. Anyway, Matt, so Matt, Emery explodes in California. Let's do a little true or false, okay?
All right.
With Nick Emery. Looking forward to next year. True or false, Nick Emery is the leading scorer for the Cougars for the 2016-2017 season.
True.
I agree with you. True. You think Micah's the other candidate?
That's who I was thinking of. Yep, I think he's the other candidate.
Yeah, but I think it's Emery's team next year.
Give the young man the keys.
Give the young man the keys. And we're seeing him gain some confidence on dribble drives, which, you know, the three-pointers are nice, but we saw against Santa Clara and against San Francisco, his ability to penetrate and create his shot inside the key, which is great. He will be a league or conference MVP, I should say, before he graduates. True or false? He will be.
False.
I'm going to say true.
I haven't seen enough to jump on that bandwagon quite yet.
It was pretty awesome in person, dude. On Thursday, it was pretty awesome in person. Now, that being said, Kyle Collinsworth, for example, is likely to never have won a conference MVP.
Yeah.
A lot of things have to work out for you to do that. We'll get to Kyle Collinsworth here in a minute. Emery, do you think he's turned a corner here, or do you think this was just two really good games against two pretty lackluster teams?
Well, I'm going to go ahead and say both. I think that was two pretty good games against two pretty bad teams. But sometimes that is something that can help you get into a groove and turn the corner, to use the phrase that you chose. But it's this type of experience, this type of chance to get into a rhythm is exactly what he needs.
Yes.
And this is what's going to turn him into the player that we're hoping he becomes next year.
Yes. And let's not get ahead of ourselves, right? None of us are proclaiming him, from a scorer's standpoint, Tyler Haws or Jemmer, for heaven's sakes. But it was impressive for a freshman to be able to put on a scoring show like that right after he had maybe his two worst games of the year.
Yep.
So it's impressive. I like it. Sticking with the basketball team, Matt, Vanquish the Foe had an interesting piece about Collinsworth and whether he will win the player of the year. I'd say it's unlikely he wins player of the year. I think Wiltshire is the guy to beat. But Matt, percent chance Kyle Collinsworth wins West Coast Conference player of the year?
I'm going to go with 35.
35.
I think he's in the running. I think he clearly belongs in the discussion.
Yeah. It's him or Wiltshire, right?
Yeah. I think Wiltshire's over 50%.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's Wiltshire. I think, you know, if you look at the advanced statistics, though, it could be Sabonis. Sabonis may be the most worthy. He may be the best player in the league. And gosh, against SMU, I don't know if you saw that Gonzaga SMU game, but they win if Wiltshire could have put in a decent night. Sabonis was a one man show, but I think Collinsworth, Sabonis, and Wiltshire are clearly the three best. Best players in the league. I'll give him like a 20% chance just because I think it's Wiltshire. Sabonis will get some votes as well, and probably Emmett Narr from St. Mary's, though I don't think he's quite as good as the other three we're talking about. Matt, historically, I didn't even realize this. They do a good job on Vanquish the Foe. The piece is written by Keith Schertz. And that's, I was going to make some jokes, but I'll just stay away from it. I'm sure his name gets made fun of. And I just got published. I had a article I just got interviewed for work. And guess what? Adam Magnum.
Yes, Adam Magnum. Way to go.
Luckily, you know, they're journalists. It's not like they're supposed to double check stuff like that. They don't tell you.
You know, so I was in a hotel last week in New Orleans. I went to log into the internet. And it says you have to put in your name and your room number.
That's,
you know,
happened to me before.
So I put in my name and room number. It said, no, you don't have internet. I'm like, well, I know I have internet. So I was like, oh. I typed in Magnum. Access granted.
Yeah, that happens to me on occasion too. It's great when it happens. So anyway, we've got what were we talking about? You threw me off.
Oh, you just got published. The bro Magnum in that backup Keith Shirts article on Vancouver.
Oh, Keith Shirts. Oh. Yeah. So going back, wow, we really went far afield on that one. Well done, Magnum boys. So players, 11 BYU players have won Player of the Year honors. I wouldn't have been able to name half of these. Okay, so John Fairchild in 64-65, the new jump.
I remember John.
Yeah, sure you do.
I think that was my freshman year.
Yeah, something like that. Danny Ainge, 80-81, only won it once. Devin Durant in 82-83, he was a co-player of the year. Timo Saarelainen in 84-85, I would not have gotten that one. Michael Smith, I would have guessed. Did you realize Mikkeli Wesley won it?
Nope.
I did not realize that either. Or that a couple years later, Rafael Araujo won it?
That one, if I would have thought about it, I might have come up with.
Then the next two, I would never have come up with. And it's Keena Young and Lee Kummerd in back-to-back years.
Oh, yeah. Lee is still jumping around in the in Europe, isn't he?
I believe that is correct, yes. And then, of course, Jimmer in his senior season and Tyler Hawes. One of the things they point out in this article is juniors and seniors typically are the only people that win these awards, conference player of the year awards. That's not entirely true, but it's highly likely, and that's why I think it's Wiltshire's, even though Sabonis is probably having a better season. I think it's Collinsworth and Wiltshire's to do. So, any other thoughts in KC?
No, that pretty much sums it up.
Yep, that pretty much sums it up. He's pretty awesome. Matt, let's talk about football. We do occasionally talk about football on this program.
It is a topic that we have been known to address.
So, as is usually the case, a BYU athletic trainer broke some news today. Taysom Hill is coming back.
Love it when they do that.
Yeah, love it when they do that. Taysom Hill is back, Matt, on the 0 to Detmer scale. How excited are you?
Taysom excited. I'm Taysom excited.
Taysom excited.
Detmer, nice. Sorry, I lost track of the scale there for a second.
Well played. Yeah, me too. I'm super excited. I'm glad he's coming back. We'll get into some of those details here in a bit. Cragthorpe in the Deseret News, in the Salt Lake Tribune, basically says Taysom Hill's coming back is good, and then basically lists all the reasons why he thinks it's not good.
See, that's weird.
It was kind of a weird article. He's been saying since the beginning that Taysom would transfer. Spencer said earlier on the podcast that Taysom had options. I'm assuming Michigan, though Spencer didn't say that. But let's just keep that rumor going without substantiation. I love it.
Yeah, feed that beast.
So Matt, is it crazy to think that Tanner Mangum beats out a healthy Taysom Hill to be the starter against Arizona in, by the way, 200 days from today?
Yes. Yes, I do think it's crazy.
I agree with you.
See, and I had this conversation earlier today, and I promised I would mention this on the podcast.
Uh-oh.
I had one of my most proud moments as a father today.
Okay. All right.
I got a text message on my phone.
Okay.
And it was a screenshot from Instagram, of the Instagram post from BYU football, which was a picture they took of Taysom Hill's tweet. It was a text from my 11-year-old son, and all it was the picture. He is the one that broke the news to me that Taysom Hill was coming back.
You're doing it right.
Oh,
you sent that picture to me.
I copied it from his text to me and I sent it to you. And I'll tell you, you have a moment, you know, where you wonder, am I doing this right as a parent? Am I doing it right? And right there, I knew I'm doing something right.
Yeah. I have a lot of those moments wondering if you're doing it right.
Anyway, but we also had the same conversation about what do you do? Does Taysom beat out Tanner? Then what does that look like? I think that a healthy Taysom is the starter in 2016. And you and I have talked about this before. How does Tanner handle that? I know, and I've been on the boat of, well, if I'm Tanner, I'm out. But I think you're probably right, or at least your previous opinion. I think Tanner weathers that storm. But Taysom, you have to go with Taysom if he's healthy, right? Don't you? I mean, can you not?
So Matt Brown from SB Nation was on BYU Sports Nation this morning. He says a healthy Taysom is worth 2 extra wins over whatever the projections say with Tanner being the quarterback. And I think he's right. Taysom Hill can win games by himself. Now, Tanner may hit that level this year. It's possible. He had a great freshman year, okay? So this is not an anti-Tanner anything. I think Tanner has a much better chance of playing in the NFL than Taysom does, of having like a sustained NFL career. Taysom Hill's game is so good for college football, where the linebackers aren't as fast as he is. A lot of them aren't even as big as he is. Where those legs can come and where not being able to throw the deep ball is not a significant enough weakness to where offenses can shut you down. So yes, I think it's crazy to think a healthy Taysom isn't the starter. The problem is, it's not crazy to think there isn't a healthy Taysom.
That's the concern, right?
Right. I mean, he hasn't played any football yet, right? So he's probably not going to play spring ball. There is an argument to be made that he just may not be ready come Arizona to be the starter, and so you go with Tanner, which will set up some interesting things. Let's get to that sometime, Matt. We've got a ton of tweet bag questions.
Tweet bag.
All right, so let's go to our first one. Let's see. Where are we? We have a ton of them today. So what do you think the likelihood that Taysom and Tanner will be in the backfield at the same time at the same time, Matt?
I'm sorry.
That's from at Justin Thornton on Twitter. Some trickeration. How often do we see them on the field at the same time?
So, I'll go with the first part of the question. The likelihood that we see it happen, 100%.
Yes.
How often?
A couple times.
I don't know that you see it every game.
I think you see it every game. I think you make teams, it'll be on film that you do this a couple times a game for sure. Can you imagine you line up 2 quarterbacks in kind of a pistol formation where they could hike it to either of them?
And one of them is a deadly runner?
Yeah, I love it.
Who's the size of any of your linebackers?
Yeah, I like it. So Matt, that's a tough one. This was discussed on our Twitter timeline today, but I didn't get a specific question on it. Percent chance that he redshirts this year?
Zero.
Zero, right?
Didn't you read the tweet? One more year, he said.
No. Not Taysom, Tanner.
Oh, Tanner. He's not going to redshirt this year. We just said he's going to come in for some trickeration.
Yeah, he's not going to redshirt this year. Number one, I disagree with the Taysom Hill's injury prone. I know people think that's stupid. I don't think past injuries are as predictive of future injuries as people think they are, especially when they're unrelated from one another. So I know he's had 2 season-ending injuries. I'm not a moron. I just don't think it's as a given that he's going to, you know, fall down the first game and be hurt like a lot of people do. That being said, a lot of quarterbacks don't get through the year completely healthy. So
you miss a game or two. I mean,
yeah. And are you not going to put Tanner in if Taysom, say, misses a game? Of course you are. So yes, there will be that. Matt, we've got one from Ryan Sorensen. That's at RJ Sorensen, longtime listener, first time tweet bag question. What do you
tweet
think?
Tweet bag. Welcome to the tweet bag.
Yeah, welcome to the tweet bag, Ryan. What do you think the best way to use Taysom Hill is this year, and what will be his role in the NFL? Matt, let's start with that first one. What is the best way to use Taysom this year?
I'm using him as a quarterback. I'm going to use him a lot like we've seen him used previously. I think that's the best use of his talents, especially with what we saw, even if though it was very, very brief, the way he was able to throw the ball and how that had been improved upon compared to the previous year. Now, the second part of the question, what will be his role in the NFL? I have a lot of kind of sarcastic answers for that.
Uh-oh. Stop with the sarcasm.
Like commentator or fan? I'm just kidding. This isn't like when I made the comment about somebody hiding in the locker room. I don't know. I don't know what his role is in the NFL. I think that if you look at history, the NFL's had a hard time figuring out what to do with somebody like a Taysom Hill. And before I get too excited about Taysom Hill's future in the NFL, because I think he's got some real talent, he's got to get there healthy. And I'm not trying to say he's injury prone either, but it's just hard to tell right now what you think he'd be able to do there. I just don't think we have enough information.
So, Matt, how old is Taysom Hill?
34.
Well played, sir.
No, I don't know. How old? What has he got to be, 23?
No, I believe I'm looking it up as we speak to get his birth date.
He's 23, 24?
Taysom Hill. Do they not put their birth dates on here? On the roster?
Yeah, but just kind of, you can kind of eyeball it, right? What year did he come back from his mission?
He came back from his mission in, so he redshirted at Stanford, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so then he came back from his mission in 2012. So he redshirted at Stanford in 2000. So he graduated high school in, what, 2008? So wow. How old is he?
Was probably closer than with my original guess.
Yes. One of the issues, I believe he's 27. I believe he's 27. One of the issues at this point for Taysom Hill in the NFL, and we'll get to his role here in a second, is his age. Even if he puts together a phenomenal season this year as a quarterback, that'll put him on draft boards. But if you're an NFL GM, there is not a lot of examples of drafting older quarterbacks who then go on to become a meaningful NFL quarterback. You know,
but what about the advantage of sending all these guys out on their missions? Isn't that kind of cheating? Don't we gain some huge advantage by doing that?
Yeah.
Isn't that why we do it? Isn't that why the church instituted a missionary program?
Yes, clearly. But you know, the same would have been true if he'd went to Michigan and won a national championship, right? The NFL scouts are still going to sit there and go, but he's 26. You know, or 27, whatever.
You look at a guy like, who was it, Whedon?
Whedon.
Was a little bit older coming out. Every time a guy comes out that age, these types of questions are raised. Yeah. And if you look historically, they have a hard time.
Yes, historically. Now, there are some exceptions out there. But right now, the guys that are big-time NFL quarterbacks, they come into the league at 21, right? And a lot of them are making Pro Bowls, the really, really good ones, before they're 25. And a lot of them are done by the time they're 33. So, you know, you're looking at something. I mean, everyone will look at, well, Brady and Manning are still hocking it, and they're almost 40, but that is the exception, not the rule, right?
And I don't know if I'd define it as hocking it. Did you watch the Super Bowl? No.
Well, Manning certainly isn't. Tom Brady's still at the top of his game, but yes, Manning may not be at the top of his game anymore. You know, he may ask that HGH supplier if he's getting the good stuff.
Wow.
I'm sorry. I couldn't resist. Wow.
We never touch that stuff.
No, but I couldn't resist. Yeah, neither is ESPN. They haven't reported it either. I couldn't resist. Sorry, Broncos fans. You still got your title. They can't take it away. Trust me.
The
NFL has been trying to take Patriots championships away for years. They can't do it. They can't take them away once you've won them.
Listen, the only way you're going to lose anything is if you played for Pete Carroll in college. All right.
Yes. Yes.
In which case, you're going to have to give a trophy back. But yes. Come on. Does anybody really care at this point?
No. And would you ever say that Reggie Bush didn't win the Heisman that year?
Come on. That's just silly.
That after the fact stuff is absolutely silly. So Matt, another tweet bag question on this same topic from Jeff Johnston, that's at Geoff BYU. He asks, how much do you expect Mangum to play this season if Hill's the starter? So Matt, percent of snaps, assuming Hill's healthy, that Mangum gets this year, over under 10%.
Ooh, that's a good line right there.
Yeah, I'm good at this. I'm a pro. Call me Vegas.
I'm gonna go with under.
I'm gonna go with,
because I don't think you see that mix every game.
I think
he gets a game or two maybe during the season. He might get a whole game or two.
No, let's say Hill is healthy enough to be the starter all season.
Oh, under.
I go over. I think they'd end up doing a two QB system. Let's go to the tweet bag poll,
man. Oh boy.
So I asked today on Twitter. You may have heard of Twitter. If they go to like a timeline where it tells you what's important, are you going to be pissed?
I don't want them to tell me what's important. I kind of like making that decision myself. I'm a grown man.
Yeah. I just use the P word. I don't know if we've ever done that. No,
I think I did once, and I immediately asked, can I say this?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you're right. It's been 222 episodes. I can't imagine that word has not slipped in. So
wait, hold on real quick. This is your Twitter poll about who starts in September?
Yes.
Okay. Hold on.
So the four, we have 145 votes so far.
146. I just voted.
Oh, I better refresh. So we don't miss your vote. Very important. 146 votes. We have, it's still not showing up. Your vote's not showing up. Sorry.
Well, I can tell you where it is. You could probably guess.
It says who starts. Taysom, 49%. Tanner, because Taysom's hurt, 6%. Tanner, because he wins the job, 21%. And 2QB system, !! 24%. Matt, it's going to be a 2QB system. Taysom will be the starter. You will see a lot of Tanner Mangum.
This is crazy.
Why?
This never works.
Yes, it does. It does work. That is a myth. They ran packages for Tebow when he was a freshman and they won a national championship. It's a myth that it doesn't work. There are examples of it working and examples of it not.
Okay, I can think of two examples.
Okay.
The one you just cited and Ohio State. Give me an example that doesn't include Urban Meyer.
Touche. I can give you an example that doesn't include Urban Meyer. How about BYU?
Okay, and happened in this century. It happened in my lifetime.
Well, the BYU one happened in your lifetime.
Okay, all right.
Here's the thing. I think you have the two right guys to do it. Their skill sets are different enough, and I think they're both non-mopey, egotistical guys. I think Ty Detmer's going to try it, because here's the thing. With this schedule, like, you're going to have to break out all the stops to win 10 games, right?
It's definitely an uphill climb.
So I think he plays more than 10%. I still think it takes a team, but I think Tanner gets in there. Matt, I believe this is a Sweeney question.
Sweeney.
Let's get to Mr. Sweeney's question. If you're a Tanner, that's at Justin D. Sweeney on Twitter, and you lose out to a healthy Taysom, do you transfer, redshirt? We covered redshirt already. Asked to play as much as possible, refused to redshirt. Matt, let's start with the first one. We talked about this a little bit. Transfer, you say no.
A few weeks ago I felt differently about this, but what does that really gain him?
Nothing.
He's going to have to sit out a year anyway.
Yes.
And at least here he's clearly the heir apparent.
He is the guy. And if Taysom goes down, he's the guy. So I don't think he could do that. I don't think Tanner does... That Tanner does any of these other things.
No, I think the other thing he does, I think he does the refuse to redshirt and want to play as much as possible.
Yeah, but he's not going to be like make a big deal out of it, right?
No.
It's not going to become a deal. So another good Twitter question, Matt. It's actually the first one we got today, and that is from Justin Whiting, I believe. Here we are, from Justin Whiting at JN Whiting on Twitter. Suggestions on how to not get my hopes too high with Tanner and Taysom both coming back next year and Detmer being the offensive coordinator. I have nothing because now mine are off the charts.
There is no help for you, my friend. But you know what? If this goes wrong, we're all going to come crashing down together. But this is like a candy land for BYU football fans. Yeah. We got Tanner. We got Taysom. Ty Detmer's the offensive coordinator.
I know.
This is insane. This is like when you made teams in EA Sports NCAA back in the day. This is the type of stuff you would do. You would name your coach Ty Detmer, right?
Yes.
You'd be like, oh, my offensive coordinator is Ty Detmer.
And then you would create these two
ridiculous quarterbacks.
Yeah. One that was a runner and one that was the traditional pocket passer.
Yeah, right? And you'd be like, I can use either one.
Yes.
And you'd put them in all these packages. Now just talking about this tweet bag question is getting me excited. I'm more excited now as a result of talking about this tweet bag question than I was 60 seconds ago. So not only can I not help you, Justin Whiting, but you've made my condition worse.
Yes, I would say you have...
I'm yelling.
The listeners, why are you yelling at them? They didn't ask for that. Well, I guess Justin did, as a matter of fact. He asked for you to yell, not directly. Matt, here's the question some people are asking, which I think bears talking about, but it's clear neither of us agree with this. So there are those out there that say, this is Tanner's team. If Taysom wants to come back, he's the backup or he should switch positions. So just for a thought experiment. Okay, you think that's ridiculous. I know. So do I. It's not Tanner's team. This was not Tanner didn't just win a national championship or whatever else.
He threw
right?
a couple sweet Hail Marys, though.
He had an awesome freshman year. There's no doubt about it. But Taysom Hill, we might remember, was pretty good when he played, too.
Above average.
Above average, just a little bit. So Matt, if he were to switch positions, which would, quite frankly, I think will only be initiated by Taysom. I'm guessing when he said, I'd like to come back, he conditionally said, I am playing quarterback. Or that was the understanding. Okay. But let's say he walks into the office in fall camp and says, the clear Tanner is the guy. I'll switch positions. Give me the position he should play. And I'll tell you why you're wrong and what position he should play.
No, because I'm going to say the position I know you think he should play.
All right. Fire away.
Now, this is not what I think, but I believe you think.
No, do what you think. Don't preempt my preemption. Just say what you want to say.
You know what? I've thought about this since we talked about it last, and I'm going to go with tight end.
You're going to go with tight end. And why do you think that wrong decision is the right one?
I don't know that we have one. And I think you could do a lot of things with him lining up at a tight end. You could motion him back into the backfield. I think you could get him the football in space. You could create some mismatches up against linebackers who might have the size to get him but not the speed. I think there's a lot of things you could do with him at tight end that could make the offense interesting and dangerous.
Yeah, I think doing him as a tight end or an H-back type of use could be extremely interesting, but it's the wrong thing. He's a running back. I
that's not what I thought you were going to say.
What do you thought I was going to say?
Safety.
No, yeah. No. He's got the best vision and instincts of a runner that has maybe ever played at BYU. You don't put him on the defensive side of the ball because he hasn't played there. And though I think his instincts would be good, his technique, it's so different. It is tight end or it is running back. I think those are the only two legitimate options.
I could argue defensive back.
No.
I think his ability to read offenses would be amazing.
Yes, there would be some awesome advantages there, but there's two reasons no. Number one, we're already stacked there. We don't need a defensive back, right? We have a lot of talent coming back.
We don't need a running back.
Yeah, but he automatically becomes no ill Will meant towards Jamal Williams. He becomes number one on the depth chart. He's Luke Staley with more speed. He's the best runner we've ever had in the history of the program. And the statistics bear it out. It's not even close. With sacks factored in, he has, like, the highest yards per carry. Like, it's insane. I just think he'd be an awesome running back. But it's all kind of funny because none of this matters. Because he's not playing running back, tight end, or safety, right?
He's going to be a quarterback.
He's going to be a quarterback. And he should be a quarterback. And
do you think he could be evaluated as an NFL running back?
I don't know if he's fast enough to be an NFL running back, but yes. If I were an NFL person looking at the tape, the problem is running as a quarterback and running as a running back are not the same things. And his injury proneness, whether you believe it or not, that's one thing that as a running back you'd be worried about because running backs' shelf life in the NFL is very short.
Yeah, and age and wear and tear becomes a real issue.
Yes, yes, that becomes a real issue. He averages 5.5 yards per carry when he was healthy in 2013. In 2012, he averaged 6.1 yards per carry. Now, granted, he was doing mostly running packages, so that's a little unfair. That's pretty good.
That is pretty good.
That is pretty good. Matt, we haven't talked about this, but you know, lately he's got net yards, net rushing yards. He is let's see, net rushing yards. He is 2,200 yards, and Jamal Williams has 2,500 yards. If they're both healthy, Jamal stays. Will keep that and very likely pass Harvey Unga as the all-time leading rusher. Matt, chances if Taysom's healthy at 2,200 that he could break the top three? I mean, he gets over 700, right? He'll pass Jamal Willis for sure.
Yeah.
He could pass Curtis Brown. He could end up being a top three rusher at BYU.
That's just crazy.
As a QB who didn't play two seasons. A healthy Taysom Hill all of his years, and he's the career rushing leader at BYU.
Does he have a Heisman?
Think about that for a second. Yeah. Yeah, I think he wins. He would have won a Heisman this last year. Schedule that we had, if he had some big games against the right teams, he could have. I should say that. Like, it's a given. We shouldn't say that. Matt, before we sign off, Bronco Mendenhall is not out of the news. For BYU fans, he said on a radio interview this week that he thinks independence is unsustainable. I don't believe is a word.
Unsustainable. Is that like flammable and inflammable?
That's right. That's right. You got that. You got flammable, that straight, buddy.
Inflammable.
So Matt, is this even news? Didn't he already say this when he was coach of BYU?
Do I care? What Bronco Mendenhall has to say at this point?
Yeah,
I have zero care.
But didn't he say this already?
The needle on my care meter, nope, not broken, just isn't moving.
yes. But he said this already. Yeah,
he's already said this. Like, I think he said this when he was still the coach.
Yes, he did. He said it last year. I mean, not exactly, maybe not as strong as what he said in this interview, but he said very clearly, long term, we got to get into a conference.
And you know what? He may be right.
I think he is right.
I just don't understand why this is news. It's like all the times that his Twitter feeds gets retweeted into my Twitter feed.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Oh wow! Look, they're playing Old Dominion, twice, three times. Who cares?
Oh look, here's him and the coaches sledding at the stadium. Why do I know these things? I know these things about Bronco Mendenhall's life, and now I can't get them out of my head. I wish him no ill will, but there's only so much space up there.
Oh man. Oh, it'll be good. It'll be good, Matt. Well, I think we have one more from Sweeney, if I can find it. Let's see. I thought I had another one. He says basically, can we just complete this feel good weekend? Nick Emery and Taysom, and get the Big 12 conference invite already. Let's do it.
All right. Well, I'm glad we got that planned out.
You know, I've been watching a lot of college basketball lately, and watching the Big 12, I just keep thinking, number one, this would not have been a good year for us.
We would not be the cream of the crop.
No, we would not be third in the conference, by the way, in the Big 12 this year. But I just thought, like, you know, when we have those games with San Diego State and either at the Marriott Center or in San Diego, they were rocking, right? Like, you had 20,000 fans going crazy and watching some of these Oklahoma games on TV, and it's like, oh, man, after sitting in San Francisco, I want to sit in Norman. You know what I mean? Watching a BYU game. I don't want to sit in San Francisco.
Nope.
You know, I want to be sitting in Ames, Iowa. Now, I say all these things because of my job. I could easily schedule business trips to both Norman and Ames. I realize for a lot of fans that doesn't sound as exciting as San Francisco.
Ames, Iowa is not grabbing my attention.
It should. It's a nice place. It's not.
I'm sure it is. No, I'm sure it's a great town. Great town.
Great town. But anyway, I don't think that Justin, don't hold your breath. I don't think that's coming. It's probably not coming.
Can you imagine if Taysom's return and the Big 12 invite were announced the same week?
We'd break BYU Twitter.
I'm not even sure what would happen.
BYU Twitter would explode. We'd be gone.
We'd shut her down. Twitter would be shut down.
It'd be shut down. You couldn't even type in BYU. It just wouldn't let you do it. Or Taysom or Big 12 conference. Just wouldn't let you do it. Well, Matt, next week I will be calling in from a third straight location. I am actually doing the show from Jonesboro, Arkansas this week.
There's a school in Jonesboro, Arkansas, isn't
Arkansas
there?
State.
There it is.
Red Wolves. I saw all the signs as I was driving into town this afternoon. So I'll be doing it from a third location next week. Mystery. I'll let you know next week on the podcast.
Wow, I can't wait to find out.
Yes, yes, yes. And the week after that, I'll be doing it from another location, I think. We'll see.
I think the week after that, I might be doing it from a location.
Sweet.
I don't know.
Next week, of course, we will preview the big game against Gonzaga. Everything hangs on that. Any hope at an at-large bid, which I think is a long shot at this point anyway, hangs on that game, right?
If there is any hope at all, yes.
Yes, yes. You cannot lose that game and get an at-large bid. We need another win.
Those two things will not coexist.
Those two things will not coexist. Well, Matt, thanks everybody for downloading and listening. Of course, as I said at the beginning, go to facebook.com/riseandshout. Like the podcast there. Follow us on Twitter at @BYU_riseshout. Get all of your Cougar news at cougarfan.com. And we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars.